June 14th is Flag Day, and in the midst of our celebration of the nation's preeminent symbol, the conversation will no doubt turn once again to what it means and to how far we can or ought to protect it. Some will argue that the flag stands for the nation and should not be desecrated in any way, while others will argue that the flag stands for freedom and that Americans should have the right even to burn it in the exercise of that freedom. Here to provide some historical perspective on that debate is Talking History's Dennis Mihalik, talking to Robert Justin Goldstein.
Thank you, Brian. Since 1949, Americans have observed Flag Day on June 14th, although it's not a national holiday. During the past decade, however, one of the most emotional political disputes has been the attempt to pass a constitutional amendment prohibiting flag desecration. Here to put the issue in historical perspective is Robert Goldstein, professor of political science at Oakland University in Rochester, Michigan, and the author of several books on the topic, including his most recent edition titled Desecrating the American Flag, Key Documents of the Controversy from the Civil War to 1995, available from the Syracuse University Press. Welcome, Professor Goldstein.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Every school kid knows the mythical story of Betsy Ross sewing the first American flag during the American Revolution. Did the flag immediately become a venerated symbol?
Well, no, it didn't. I believe the flag was first officially designated in, I think it was 1777, but there's no mention of a flag or flag desecration in the Constitution. There were no federal laws to protect the flag against desecration actually until 1968. And in fact, nobody really paid much attention to the flag at all until the Civil War. As a symbol of the country before the Civil War, the American Eagle, or the feminine figure of Columbia, which doesn't really mean anything much to people today, was the more prominent symbols of the country. The flag only flew over federal buildings and over American ships at sea. It wasn't flown over local government buildings or local schools. And as the director of the Betsy Ross House mentioned during during the recent flare-up of this controversy in 1989, it was unthinkable that a private person would fly a flag from their home before the Civil War. It just wasn't done. So in short, the answer is no. Nobody really paid much attention at all to the flag before the Civil War. And in fact, there was so little interest in the flag that there was no private company that even manufactured flags until the Mexican-American War, which is 1846.
Mm-hmm. Now, the Civil War, it became important because then it became an American flag versus the Confederate flag?
Is essentially, that right. During the Civil War, the flag suddenly became the symbol of the North, essentially. So it became a revered symbol in the North, but on the other hand, it became a hated symbol in the South. Our first flag burning in American history took place during the Civil War in the South. And just as it, for the first time, became used as a symbol of dissent, as in the flag burning, for the first time attempts were made to punish the symbolic use of the flag for dissent. During the Civil War, a man in New Orleans was actually executed by a court-martial for having torn a flag down from a federal building in New Orleans during the fighting there and having dragged it through the mud. He was shot.
I see. Now, is it then just a straight line of controversy from the Civil War to the present over flag desecration?
No, I wouldn't say it's really a straight line. After the Civil War, the flag did retain its new prominence, but mostly this new prominence was manifested in the use of the flag in advertising and in commercial usage. So there's an ad from, I believe, 1880, which shows an American flag, and against the backdrop of a flag, there's a picture of a big ham, and written against the stripes of the flag, it says, such and such brand ham is an American institution. So the continued prominence of the flag was first reflected in advertising usage, and it was really as a reaction against advertising usage, not any kind of political use, that the first so-called movement to outlaw flag desecration developed. But even this was not until about 1890 or so. So there's an additional delay before you get into this concept of flag desecration as any kind of a continuing theme. This is only in 1890, And even thereafter, it takes about another 20 years before we get in the kind of modern manifestation of this controversy where the real focus of ire of those who are horrified by what they call flag desecration, where the real focus becomes a political use of the flag, so-called dissenting use of the flag. So it's really only during the period immediately preceding and during World War One that we really see the modern roots of the controversy in a form that's somewhat similar to what we're used to. So since then, there's kind of a straight line. But even then, there are periods when this is an issue, and there are long periods when nobody pays any attention to it whatsoever.
Mm-hmm. And in your book, you give numerous examples in this era, 1890 to World War One, where the people demanding protection for the flag were also angry at the Democratic and Republican Party use of it.
Right. As I just mentioned, the first manifestation of the flag desecration controversy is with commercial and advertising use of the flag. But in 1896, the flag was essentially appropriated, you might say, by the Republican presidential candidate, William McKinley. He sort of handed out flags and surrounded his campaign with flags. And as some of your listeners may know, the 1896 election was a very bitter election between McKinley and the Democratic populist candidate, William Jennings Bryan. And tempers were so heated that, given that the McKinleyites surrounded themselves with flags, there were, in a number of cases, there were fights that broke out and disorders, and flags were damaged. So another original impetus, aside from advertising, alleged misuse of the flag, was alleged political misuse of the flag, that is, the political parties using the flags to promote their own candidates, which included, in some cases, using flags which had political slogans and political pictures affixed to the flag or actually printed on the flag.
Mm-hmm. Now, the flag protection movement did succeed at the state level in the era around World War One. Is that correct?
The first state law was actually passed in 1897. And then there was a big flurry of state laws passed between 1897 and World War One, and all of the other states, mostly southern states, which weren't really that enthusiastic about the American flag because of the Civil War, those states passed laws between 1912, and the last state to pass such a law was in 1932. So by 1932, all of the then 48 states did pass flag desecration laws, although there was no federal law passed, as I mentioned earlier, until 1968.
Mm-hmm. And what form did these, on average, state law take?
Right. They were extremely broad-ranging. Essentially, the laws outlawed three things. One was any kind of use of flag imagery to advertise anything. So you couldn't print a picture of a flag on a bottle of beer, and this actually became a court case in 1907, such a use of picture of the flag to sell Stars and Stripes beer in Nebraska. That was one thing. The second thing you couldn't do would be to print any kind of advertising or other material on the image of a flag. And the third thing you couldn't do would be to either physically or actually verbally criticize or damage the flag. What was particularly remarkable about many of these laws was that the definition flag was incredibly vague. Flag was defined to mean any object made of any material of any size that remotely resembled a flag, essentially. Most of these laws said a flag was anything that a reasonable person taking a quick look at an object might think was a flag. So it didn't have to be made of cloth, it didn't have to be any particular size or dimensions or any particular colors or even have any particular number of stars and stripes. As long as it kind of looked like a flag, then it qualified as a flag.
Mm-hmm. Now, I mean, did free speech advocates challenge these state anti-desecration laws?
There was a little bit of free speech challenge, but it was pretty much restricted to what we would now view as the extreme left, socialists and anarchists who began to be the subject of flag desecration laws for allegedly violating them. But for the most part, the early challenges came from commercial interests that wanted to use the flag for advertising purposes, like the Stars and Stripes beer issue I mentioned in Nebraska. From a broader perspective, our modern conception of free speech doctrine really was not very well developed at this point. Until 1925, the Supreme Court held that the First Amendment and its free speech provisions didn't even apply to the relation of individuals to the state. It only applied to federal laws, but not to state laws. So you really did not have the whole free speech issue in anything like its modern dimension. And there was some free speech argument, but it was very much on the periphery. Most of the attacks had to do with arguing that these laws infringed on private property rights.
Mm-hmm. Now, you say a federal law was passed in 1968. What
right.
prompted that?
This was essentially prompted by a renewed controversy over flag desecration. You had this flare-up around the turn of the century that I mentioned. There were a lot of prosecutions during World War One, and then the whole issue kind of died away. There was another very small flare-up before and during World War Two, and then it really died away. But what revived the issue was during the Vietnam War, as I'm sure some of your listeners can remember, there was a, really for the first time in American history, an upsurge of incidents in which people did physically damage flags for the purpose of expressing political dissent. And Congress passed this law, I think clearly as an attempt to stamp out what they regarded as a powerful form of dissent that really disturbed them. Of course, there was no real reason to pass such a law on the federal level because it was already illegal in all of the states. So it was purely symbolic politics.
Mm-hmm. But then in 1989, right. the United States Supreme Court voided those flag desecration laws. Is that correct?
Actually, the answer is yes and no, which will probably surprise you to hear me say that. The Supreme Court struck down a Texas state law, and most observers and the dissenting opinions from the Supreme Court, you know, said that the Supreme Court decision in 1989, which is Texas versus Johnson, that it clearly struck down all state flag desecration laws as well as the 1968 federal law. But something quite interesting, which most people don't know, which the press has failed to cover, is the fact that in many states, flag desecration prosecutions have continued as though the Supreme Court decision in 1989 and an even broader, similar decision in 1990 in the case of U.S. versus Eichmann had never occurred. The states have basically said, well, this decision in 1989 affected only the Texas law at issue, and the 1990 decision they claimed affected only a new federal flag desecration law that was passed in 1989. And they basically said the state laws are left unaffected, which from a legal standpoint is quite outrageous. But from a technical standpoint, until you have a court decision that actually says, as a result of the Supreme Court decision in 89 and 90, the Louisiana law or the Massachusetts law, the California law is also unconstitutional, the states have been able to pretend that they're not. And there have been continuing prosecutions, which the press has basically failed to cover.
Mm-hmm. Now, what were the major arguments in terms of voiding these laws? Was the Supreme Court decision unanimous?
The Supreme Court decisions in both 1989, Texas versus Johnson, and 1990, U.S. versus Eichmann, were not unanimous. They were deeply and bitterly split, 5-4 decisions. But basically, the argument for voiding the laws was simply that the flag is a symbolic object. It doesn't have any function other than to express symbolism. Everybody understands when you wave a flag, you're saying something symbolic. And if you burn a flag, you're clearly saying something symbolic. Also, a flag has no other function than symbolism. So when you interact with a flag, you damage it, you fly it, you burn it, whatever you do with it, you're symbolically saying something. And the court said that that's really the same as giving a speech or writing a newsletter, and therefore is clearly protected by the free speech protections of the First Amendment, and that the heart of the First Amendment is precisely the need to protect speech that's unpopular, that's at the core of the First Amendment.
Mm-hmm. And so the 1990 decision voided the attempt at a new federal law,
right.
And then this is what has currently led to the demand for a constitutional
exactly.
amendment to protect the flag.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Well, in about the minute and a half that we
sure.
that we have left, do you personally think there's a need for a constitutional amendment to protect the flag?
Well, I don't think it'll surprise you if I tell you no. It's first of all, use of the flag for symbolic purposes, whether burning or waving or whatever you want to do, is a form of expression. It's, I think, clearly protected by the First Amendment. I don't think anyone can show that the still handful of flag desecration incidents have caused any damage to the country. If anything, they've caused a wave of patriotism or caused people to think about the meaning of democracy and our liberties and the First Amendment. Even if lots and lots and lots of people burn flags, it still wouldn't really damage the country, and it might alert our political leaders to the fact that people have a lot of dissatisfaction. So it could actually do some good. But even if people hate it, that's the price we pay for living in a democratic country. I, you know, don't like a lot of things some of our political leaders say, but I wouldn't try to throw them in jail for it.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that an incident like flag desecration can actually have a positive political message?
Well, I think it certainly theoretically can. For example, suppose instead of fringe groups who the press can ignore and can be treated as weirdos, suppose 200 establishment Americans had burned flags jointly to protest the expansion of the war in Vietnam, or to protest the detention and expulsion from their homes without any kind of legal provisions of 100,000 Japanese American citizens during World War II, or had protested the abuses of the FBI, or had protested the abuses of McCarthyism during its early days. I think such a statement might have really altered American history. Maybe if 200 prominent Americans had done that in 1965, we wouldn't have a wall in Washington, D.C. today with 58,000 names carved in it.
A very interesting observation. Well, that's all the time we have.
Okay.
I want to thank our guest, Professor Robert Goldstein, author of Desecrating the American Flag, available from Syracuse University Press.